section86.com. We're changing the world of podcasting one show at a time.
Hello, my name is George Takei. Before we get started, we would like to remind everyone that this show is for entertainment purposes only. Three quarters of this crap is total BS anyway. The views and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of the hosts and should not be associated in any way with our guests and sponsors. If you are easily offended, we recommend you press stop right now. But if you do, you will deprive yourself of the most amazing auditory orgasm. And who doesn't enjoy a good auditory orgasm? Oh my. Welcome to It Burns When I Pee.
Welcome to the Dirty Stalls of It Burns When I Pee. For the past 6 years, the podcasting god,
hallelujah,
Blake Clayton, has brought you the best music, interviews, and comedy on the interweb. So sit your asses down, grab a hold of those handicap rails, grab a cocktail, and enjoy our next generation of auditory dysentery. Join Blake and his revolving door of cast members as they bring you another fucked up episode of It Burns When I Pee.
1, 2, 3, 4. When I turn my radio dial, I hear it's pop country. Those corporate jerks sure get on my nerves. That ain't country to me. Now it burns when I pee. It burns when I pee. That's what Nashville did to me. So let's take a piss on the Nashville music fest. Cause now it burns.
Follow that, bitch.
Well, come on, pretty baby, honky tonk Friday night. I said, come on, pretty baby, don't wanna sit here and fight. Well, we gotta get going, gonna do some drinking, all right. Meet me at the border, so gonna.
right, folks, welcome back to another gripping episode of It Burns When I Pee. We have with us in IBWIP Studios the one and only Danny Kaye from Danny Kaye and the Nightlifers. What's up, buddy?
Hey, what's happening, Blake?
Well, we just had a show in Pekin.
Yes, it was great. We had it at the High Note, and I couldn't be happier.
It was awesome. So let's get into the interview questions, the things that people want to know.
All right.
So how did you first get interested in the rockabilly sound?
You know, growing up, I mean, you know, in the 80s, it was, you know, I loved all the 80s music, but then I also listened to, like, the oldies station, and I just loved what I heard, and the more I got into it, you know, I was, like, listening to Elvis and Eddie Cochran and Gene Vincent, and I got deeper into, like, you know, Jerry Lee Lewis and, you know, other people like Johnny Burnett Trio and so on, and I just kept going and going until I, you know, could find more music that I loved, and that eventually led into, like, Ray Price and Hank Williams and, you know, all the great old country guys.
Awesome. So how did the band first get started?
Well, I was starting out solo, you know, as most people do. And I had a friend, Jimmy Swope, and we started, like, a little duo thing. We played here and there and, you know, and then I became friends with Johnny Ray Carroll, also known as Johnny Lawless, as most people know. And he had just picked up the bass. He wasn't even playing the bass for a month. And we just got to talking, and I came down to his house, and we just started messing around and, you know, just practicing some songs so he could practice. And, you know, I was getting practice out of it and singing and everything like that. And we actually, like, I think on our second or third practice, we actually wrote Honky Tonk Friday Night together.
Okay.
And, you know, after about, he was playing a month, you know, by himself. And then after about a month of me practicing with him, we tried it out at a bar one time. And it sounded pretty good, you know, just me and him. And then about 2 months after that, you know, a couple gigs here and there, a friend of mine from Baltimore, he was actually the lead singer, rhythm guitar player from a band called the Boom Boom Cats at the time, and which became the Garnet Hearts, Eddie McIntosh. He started playing lead for us a couple shows, and but he had his own band going on, so he couldn't just, you know, drop everything he was doing. And then when Jimmy Swope came, you know, to our show to see us, he was like, wow, okay, that's what you wanted to do. And then we just started tearing it up, man. Like, cool. We were just something new, and we just blew Baltimore apart with what we were doing, you know? And that's how it all started, you know? I mean, that was just kind of just all happened with in an accident, you know?
Right. Yeah. So how long ago was that?
Man, that was back in 2003.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Cool. So, you know, you're touring now on your way to Farm Fest and, you know, coming back. What kind of advice do you have for artists and bands that are just starting out who are, you know, haven't really went on a bigger tour or a, you know, more than a couple day tour? When you're booking them all yourself, you know, what's some advice you can give?
Booking is always a pain. It really is. Especially if you're not known in that city. I mean, start locally, work your way around the area, you know, start playing outside of the city or town you're in, and then just, you know, try to move on a little bit further. Just kind of like branch out slowly. And sure. Then when you get a good following, you know, you can just start emailing people and just trying to find your shows and whatnot. You know, you just got to keep getting that area bigger where you're known.
Sure.
And that's what you got to do. And then, of course, if you go on a larger tour, you're going to lose your butt the first couple of times.
Right.
You really are, because you're not really known in those areas, you know? So you just got to hope for the best.
Right.
You know?
It's kind of like a double-edged sword, because, you know, you need a tour to get known, you know, and spread the word. But then, you know, it's so hard to get shows where you're not known, so it's kind of a double-edged sword.
Exactly. And it's always good to have merch, you know, t-shirts, CDs, even if it's just like a, you know, home recording of you guys and you burn the CDs or something, you could sell them for $5. you know, keychains, koozies, whatever, sure. You know, I mean, those little things just help you get by, you know, just some people are like, oh, cool, man, I really like the way you sound and I'm going to buy this, right. You know?
So, speaking of CDs, Crazy Lonesome Blues is your brand new album.
Yes.
Who are some of the players that you had on the record?
Okay, well, first, Zach Sweeney. This guy, Johnny Lawless, actually found him in a blues bar in Baltimore. And this I don't want to call him a kid, but, you know, he's like 23 years old.
Right.
You know, but he's just an amazing guitar player. And, you know, Johnny brought him to me, and we just started talking, and he came up, and we fooled around a little bit on the guitar, and he's like, I really like what you're doing, and so we just started playing together. He was actually on our first album, and he plays guitar on the second album also. Currently, he moved down to Texas and is on tour with Wayne Train Hancock.
Awesome.
So, yeah, good for him. I mean, he's such an amazing player. He really deserves the, you know, go big.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So much good luck to him. Also, I contacted Liz Sloan, who I met through my buddy Jared McGovern.
Sure.
They're dating. And I knew Jared for a long time when he was in a psychobilly band, the Soul Reaping 3. And I met Liz last year at Farmageddon Festival. And I was making this album. I was like, man, I want some fiddle on this. So I asked Jared if she, you know, wouldn't mind, and he's like, I don't know, ask her.
Right.
So I asked her, and she was like, yes, I am totally in. And I'm like, wow, that's okay, this is awesome. You know, I'm like really pumped. And I actually had another bass player lined up for this CD, but the guy didn't seem all that interested. And then Liz was telling me that Jared was coming down with her. I was like, well, there's no sense for him to sit in the studio twiddling his thumbs.
Right.
Like, dude, why don't you play bass on this? He was like, the other guy's kind of like, okay, yeah, whatever. But Jared seemed pumped about it. So I was just like, all right, well, there you go.
Yeah, those are definitely two players that would, you know, definitely make a difference on an album.
Oh, yeah. Jared's come such a long way from when I first met him, you know, slapping in a psychobilly band. I mean, I was really just amazed in that studio. I mean, they were recording some of the instrumental tracks, and I'm just sitting there and I'm watching. I'm like, what the hell's going on? Where's this, all this awesomeness coming from? I was like, oh my God, this is awesome. It's like, we need to do a whole album like this. I mean, he was just amazing.
Awesome.
And everything just clicked so well. And I was just, I couldn't believe, I was like, I wasn't sure how the album was going to turn out, but I got to say, as we were recording, I was like, this is going to be a great album.
Awesome. It definitely, you know, kind of encourages it too, to get through the whole recording process when you have that kind of energy and, you know.
Oh yeah. We were all feeding off of each other. I mean, we were just like, wow. You know, I mean, it was just like, everybody was just so into it and, you know, it just went so smoothly. You know, it was absolutely amazing experience with this album.
Awesome. So you used Kickstarter to kind of help you finance some of the costs to get the album released. Do you see Kickstarter as a tool that more independent bands can use to get their music released?
It is a great tool. And unfortunately, sometimes it doesn't work out for some of the bands. I've actually known some people raise up to $4,000, and I'm like, wow, I struggled to get 2,000.
Right.
You know? But it is a great tool. Unfortunately, yeah, if you don't get all of the pledges, you know, up to that dollar amount, sure, you don't get anything.
Right.
So it's always good to kind of try to start low and then hopefully you get
right
more. Just go for the basic, you know, what you will need.
It's another tool to kind of cut out that middleman, you know. And, you know, you don't have to have somebody else finance it. Your fans are financing it. So that kind of, you know, definitely makes you want to. Do you think it adds pressure to the album? Like, when you were putting it together, are you thinking, oh, well, you know, all these people help donate to it? Or,
well, it wasn't no pressure to me. I mean, I don't know. Maybe to some people, but I was just so grateful. I was like, wow, all these people actually believe in what I'm doing.
Right.
And I was just like, you know, people knew who I was, and they said they liked my music. But when it was time to, you know, when I needed help to try to get this album out, all these people came forward and was like, "Here you go." And I was absolutely blown away. And actually, Zach Sweeney's dad, Bert, kicked in a good amount of that. I mean, it was just like, I was like, I went from like, you know, 1,400 to like 1,700 while I was in the shower.
Right.
You know, I was just like, whoa, this is awesome. Who is this person?
Right. So you're on your way, like I said, you're making your way to Montana for Farm Fest. What are you looking forward to most, you know, outside of playing? What are you looking forward to most at the festival?
At the festival?
Yeah.
I mean, well, on our way there, I'm just, you know, looking forward to meeting, you know, fans and everyone else that. But the festival, I mean, again, it's just going to be like a big family reunion. There's just going to be so many bands there. You know, Sean K. Preston's going to be there, which I know from Baltimore, my hometown. And, you know, it's just going to be a big family reunion. And that to me is the most important thing. It's just going to be a big family reunion.
And I think just like with Muddy Roots, you know, when the bands go there, you know, you also make connections, friendships, new friendships.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with and with the Roots scene, the independent scene, the more friends you have, the easier things are to get done. You know, whether it's, you know, helping get a show booked somewhere, or help, you know, or just like I said, having Jared and Liz play on your album, you know, stuff like that doesn't happen unless you network.
Exactly, and that's exactly how I got the mastering done. I played Farmageddon Festival last year, and I met the bass player from the Black Eyed Vermilion, Curtis. And we just hung out all weekend. We had such a blast. And when it was time, I was like, "Who am I going to get to master this?" And I was like, "Oh, I know."
Right.
I was like, "Curtis has a studio." So I asked him. He was like, "I would love to." So I was like, "There we go."
Awesome. All right, we're going to play a game. It's called "What's Your Favorite?" Okay.
Oh no.
So and it's a quick draw. So I'm gonna say it, and you say the first thing. Okay.
All right.
What's your favorite TV show?
I don't really have one.
All right.
Sorry.
No, that's good. What's your favorite beer?
Natty Bo, National Bohemian out of Baltimore.
What's your favorite band or artist that you listen to?
Oh, wow. that's a tough one. Yeah. I like them all for different reasons. I couldn't tell you.
That's the whole point. What's your favorite candy?
Candy? I don't even know what the name is of those things are. It was a Brock candy. It was like a white nougat thing with like these different colored jelly things in it. I don't even see them anymore, truthfully. But when I was a kid, that's all I loved to do. It was like this.
Like a taffy?
Yeah, it was like this white nougat stuff, but it had like this jelly stuff in it. So it was like kind of like white cube with a, you know, different colored jelly things in it.
All right, so we'll do this. The first fan to email us at blake@ibwip.com that knows the name of that, We'll send them some patches and a button.
Right on.
What's your favorite state to visit when or tour in?
Wow. Okay. Before it used to be Virginia. I'm really digging Illinois this tour. I really am. I said Illinois. Yes. Yeah. Y'all mispronounced that. It has an S at the end. I've always loved Virginia, North Carolina, and Illinois. Illinois this tour. Illinois has just been very kind to us this tour.
Cool. Awesome. So, who are some of your biggest influences outside of music?
Outside of music. Wow.
I can't give you all easy questions. It's 1:30 in the morning.
No, yeah, right? You know, my dad, he's a hard worker. He's more of the business type, but, you know, it was a family business, and he worked hard and really hard, you know, to get everything going. So I admire him for that, and I'm trying to take that and just trying to do that with music.
Right. Independent bands or artists have kind of been helped by the internet, you know, to gain exposure and, you know, but do you still, there's still a struggle for bands to, you know, get turnouts at clubs. You know, you could have 3,000 fans on Facebook, but when it comes to, you know, going and doing gigs, what do you think is something that, that the Roots scene needs to take the next step to kind of keep continuing to grow?
Internet is a good tool, but anybody can hit a like button on Facebook. I mean, you can only, without touring, you're not going to be that much.
Sure.
I mean, anybody can listen to music online, but without seeing that live show, you really...
So folks really need to go out.
They really need to. I mean, if you're just going to play one show a month in the same town at the same bar, it's just not going to work out. You really just need to get different bars. You need to play, you know, different festivals, try to get on, you know, as much as you can. You just really need to get out there and play, because people are going to see you live, and if they like you, they're going to keep following
sure.
you.
Sure. And the point of that question is to kind of remind bands that it's not just sit in front of the computer and plug yourself on Facebook or Reverb or whatever. There's still the traditional old school way of, the only way people are going to find out about you is if you get in their face.
Exactly. I mean, you can send band invites out to anybody, you know, hey, like my page or whatever. You can do that all day long, and you know, you might get 1 out of 10 or maybe even 10 out of 10, but without actually going out there and playing, you know, you're not going to gain new fans.
Right.
You know, you just got to put yourself out there. Sometimes you're going to make money, sometimes you're going to lose money, but if it's really worth it to you, you know, to get fans, then you're just going to go out there and do it no matter what.
Right on. So, you know, what is the most difficult part for you balancing a music career and a family life? I mean, what do you have to work at most while you're on the road to keep both of those in sync?
Well, you know what? In this technology age, it's just so much easier. I can Skype off my phone, you know, and see the kids and talk to them on the phone, or, you know, whatever. I'm just blessed that my wife is like, yeah, go out there, play music, do what you love, you know.
That's awesome.
I'm just truly blessed. She knows that this is my greatest passion, besides her and the family, of course. But, you know, she's like, this is what I want to do for myself. And she's just totally awesome with it. And, you know.
When did it first click that this is what was inside of you and this is what you wanted to do? When did you make that decision to make a conscious decision to make music, you know, a large part of your life?
I've always loved music from the time I was young. I mean, it was just always a part of me, you know. It's always just been there. It's just like I grew up on, like, you know, I grew up in the 80s, and it was like I was listening to 80, you know, the radio station in the 80s, but I mean, like, I also listened to the 50s station. Man, I gotta say, man, I was listening to that, like the oldies station. It was just like, wow, I really like this. I mean, like, you listen to some of the old doo-wop, it was like the harmonies and everything. And sure. I was just like, I just want to do this. I was like, look, this is beautiful music, you know, look at that. I was like, wow. I was like, it just really hit me inside. I mean, it was just like something I was like, I can do that. I'm going to do that one day. And I didn't really pick up the guitar until I was 17, 18 years old, which is a bit late.
Do you think that musicians, 90% of the musicians are born that way? They're born with that musician gene, because it's, you know, not everybody can just say, oh, I'm just gonna, you know, dedicate my life to something like this. I mean, do you think that it's like that in a way?
You have to have that passion. Without that passion, you know, I mean, anybody can write a song. Not everybody can write a good song.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you just have to have that burning desire inside of you. You need that fire to keep pushing you and pushing you. I mean, forget about fame or wealth or anything. I mean, you need that fire inside you to keep pushing you and moving you forward, and you just got to love to do it. It's just a desire. It's a passion, and, you know, I don't know about a gene. Like, some musicians just Some people, it just comes so naturally to, like Zach Sweeney. I mean, kid's outrageously talented. And, you know, it, some people come so easy to, and some people really have to work at it. But again, if you love it, man, you're just going to keep working at it.
So songwriting, what is your process?
You know, it comes from different places. You might hear a conversation and it might just spark an idea in your head, like, that could be a cool song, you know?
Right.
Sometimes it's from the heart, and other times it's just, I'm like, that would be a great subject, you know? And I kind of like try to put my, if it doesn't come from the heart, then I put myself in that situation. I might try to relate it into something else that happened in my life or something. And I try to make it from the heart. And, you know, I mean, I'll at least try to take an experience in my life and try to drive that into the song.
Do you ever, you know, when obviously songs don't just come out in 10 minutes, you know?
Well, not, oh, no.
But, I mean, do you often, like, do you put ideas down and kind of work on them and then kind of put them to the side and bring, you know, come back to them later on? Or do you try to work on one from beginning to end before you move on to another one?
I try to get one done. There's one song on the new CD, Heart of a Fool, where I wrote that song, and I rewrote the chord progressions probably about 15 times. It wasn't originally called Heart of a Fool. I mean, I rewrote that song where that was kind of personal, but every time I was like, I thought I was done. I just didn't like it enough that I kept rewriting the chord progressions. I kept rewriting the words. I kept rewriting the, and even when I had that done, I had it more of an upbeat, kind of swingy type of feel to it. And then when I got together with Zach, Jared, and Liz in the studio, of all places, is kind of like when we slowed it down a little bit. And it kind of became like a little Ray Price kind of shuffle.
Sure.
And it, so, I mean, like, from that whole song was such a pain, but I absolutely love it. You know, it was just one of those things.
Rory's singing to you now.
Yeah, I think she is.
You quit.
Go get Johnny Lawless. It's all right.
The art of editing. Don't worry. So the final question, the most important question, you know, where can folks go to get the new CD, Crazy Lonesome Blues, and also, you know, Heading Home, your first album.
Yes.
Where and find out where you're on tour at. Where do folks go?
Okay. Well, to find out where we're playing, you can always go to Reverb Nation Facebook page or DannyKayMusic.com. It's DannyKayMusic.com. As far as the new CD and the old CD, I got them on DannyKayAndTheNightLifers.BigCartel.com. As soon as I come off this tour, I'm going to be putting it on like CD Baby, which will also distribute it on like iTunes and everything else.
Awesome. Well, we'll put the links up on the show notes. And Danny, thank you so much, man. It was a pleasure getting to spend time with you. We met last year at Christie Fest, but you know, we got to kind of hang out. And good luck on your travels.
Thank you. And we'll also be at Christie Fest this year, coming, I believe it's October 19th in Shippensburg, Pennsylvania.
Awesome. And Christie Fest is the fest to go to. Always a good time. All right, man. Thank you very much, and take care of yourself.
Thank you, Blake.
The hardest thing I ever done was to be somebody's fool, to drink away my sorrows for something strange. Shattered dreams were always so unkind. Broken hearts have come and gone, but never a waste of time. The easiest thing I ever done was to be with you. We never could share our love, so we could never
Hello, I'm Christopher Walken. IBWIP is an interactive show. That means get off your asses and get a hold of us, baby. You can call into the show live or leave us a voicemail. The number is 1-203-429-4711. It's free, so dial it up now, I implore you. You can also email us with questions or comments at blake@ibwip.com. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to your Pia Vision YouTube page. All the links are on the front page of IBWIP.com.
Well, the sun is setting on the east side of town. When the lights come up, I'm headed down.
Baby, and only found a way to lose. Now hold. Are you a blogger or a podcaster, or you're just not happy with your web hosts? You need to check out HostGator.com. You're going to find web hosting made easy and affordable. HostGator offers unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click script installs with a free site builder, and the best control panel out there. Stop by today and try a free demo to see how easy it is. And if you use the special coupon code Section8686, you'll save 25% off your web hosting packages. What do you got to lose? Check out HostGator.com and take a bite out of your web hosting costs.